Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. It's about 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this leap day, Friday, February the 29th, and it's time for our Week in Review. We will welcome in two guests from different perspectives to talk with you about the biggest political news of the week. Join in with your observations or questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll talk lots about developments on the presidential campaign trail this week. Ralph Nader threw his hat in the ring. Michael Bloomberg pulled his out. There was one last debate between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama before the big March 4th primaries in Ohio and Texas. We'll talk a little bit about whether any ground was made there. Also, some debates going on between John McCain and conservative talk show hosts and many other developments on the campaign trail. So we'll talk about that first. We'll talk about some other news on the national scene after that. President Bush, a news conference yesterday addressing a number of issues, and lots of state news that we'll finish off our Week in Review talking about, with both houses of the legislature cranking out on various pieces of legislation. We'll get the latest on that as well. And whatever else you want to bring up at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. Let me welcome our Week in Reviewers. Tony Palmieri is an associate professor of communications at UW Oshkosh, former Green Party candidate for state legislature in 2004, a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, and media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Joy.
And also joining us, George Petak, principal at White Hirschbeck Dudek Government Government Affairs in Madison, a former Republican state senator. Good morning, George Petak.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning,
listeners.
Yes, let's start with the beginning of the week. On Sunday, on Meet the Press, Ralph Nader says he's going to run for president. Democratic presidential candidates frowned at this. What did you say, Tony? Do you say go, Ralph, go?
My thinking actually changed on this in the last week. At first, I thought that this year Ralph should do what he was good at in the 60s and 70s, which was being an organizer, mostly with young people who were frustrated and disillusioned by the Democrats and Republicans not making any progress. And I do think that if Clinton, Obama, or McCain get elected, there will be a lot of disillusioned people shortly after the election. And you need people like Nader to teach them how to organize and become activists. So I thought that should be his role this year. But then I did watch the Clinton-Obama debate, and it became clear to me that really none of them have a good health care plan. No one's talking about single-payer health care. Neither of them are talking about immediate withdrawal from Iraq. Neither of them really seem serious about correcting these corporate free trade deals like NAFTA. Mike Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, who's not running, has said, and he's right, that neither of these candidates have a real urban agenda. So, you know, in that sense, I think it's a good thing to have somebody like Nader, that people who care about those issues, who are millions in this country, I think the majority, have someone to vote for. Now, as a practical matter, Nader will not get on the ballot in more than probably 30 states, if he's lucky. So he's not going to be a factor, really, in the race. But I do appreciate the fact that someone is willing to stand up for those issues and give people an opportunity to vote, and that there will be a Green Party candidate also who will give people a similar opportunity.
Yeah. George Petak, do you think Ralph Nader will be much of a factor?
Well, I think we've seen over the years that that some independent or third-party candidates can have a major impact on what happens on the national scene. I go back to 1992 and the Ross Perot impact. In that particular case, Perot took votes away, essentially gave the country and gave the country Bill Clinton and all that entailed. I think that at this point, while Mrs. Pitak and I haven't sent any checks to Ralph Nader, I am encouraging him to run because I think it's pretty clear that that he would not take any votes away from the Republican candidate, either McCain or Huckabee, likely McCain, but would have the same impact, perhaps not at the same percentage as was achieved by Ross Perot, but essentially would take votes away from the Democrat candidate, and I think that's better for the country and better for all of us, frankly. But again, I haven't started writing checks yet for Mr. Nader's campaign.
Tony, you're not concerned about that at all?
I agree with Nader on this one. If Obama or Clinton cannot beat John McCain by a landslide with a dozen candidates in the race, something is wrong. I mean, McCain is calling for possibly staying in Iraq for 100 years. It's the most unpopular war in the history of the country. If a Democratic candidate cannot win handily in this year, there is something wrong. But, you know, they do need to be held accountable. You know, Democratic candidates cannot continue to call themselves progressives and then come out with an agenda that does not match that. So there do need to be independent candidates that push them in that direction. I do think that's the function that Nader will serve this year, along with a Green Party candidate, who is yet to be selected. It's fine for Barack, who I think is an inspiring candidate. He came to UW Oshkosh, and I've been teaching here for 20 years. It was the first time I had students ask me to go to see a political speaker and not ask for extra credit. I mean, it was incredible. They wanted to see this man, but you know, he needs to be pushed to really take specific plans, and they really need to match up his claim that he is a progressive politician.
Yeah, let me take a caller on this. Jonathan in Madison. Hi, Jonathan. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Hey, it's my birthday today.
Leo mentioned that. Happy birthday. You're 7 today because you're a leap year baby.
Exactly.
Wow. Happy birthday.
Thank you. So I wanted to say that, you know, in the year 2000, I was living in Florida, and I voted for Nader and the Green Party. And I really regret that vote now. I feel like that may have cost Gore the election back then. And I think with the possibility of another close race this year, he really could push his policies in a different way than running for president.
Yeah. Tony, you disagree.
Well, happy birthday, Jonathan. I wonder if those 250,000 Democrats that voted for Bush that year in Florida are disappointed in their votes. You know, Nader frequently cites a study, and I wish the national press and other media would give it more credit, by a professor, Solon Simmons, at George Mason University, who shows fairly conclusively, using lots of exit poll data, that Nader actually helped Gore, that there were states, many states, that actually end up going for Gore, because what Nader succeeded in doing was exciting an electorate that probably would have set out that year, and they ended up voting for Gore. That's never talked about. And I wish it would be. I think that spoiler charge has been unfair and really bogus for many years now. And again, it neglects the fact that, you know, Al Gore should have been able to beat George W. Bush handily in the year 2000. Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton ought to be able to beat John McCain handily in 2008. For them to worry about Ralph Nader, who will be on the ballot in probably 30 states if he's lucky, I just think that that's wasted thinking on the part of Democrats.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to. This is an interesting issue, and I appreciate Jonathan's sort of seeing the light, but it doesn't occur to me that anything's going to change. We need to get beyond the 2000 and the Al Gore and all of that, Tony. I think we need to look at 2008 and what impact it'll have today. Or in November, and
I thought you were going to say we need to get beyond the two-party system, because I would agree with that. It's really a one-party system,
well,
unfortunately.
I think what we can expect to see, and there's been some disappointment, certainly expressed by the polling in the national polling on the people's response to the congressional ability to get things done. But what I see is whoever's in the White House, And we see some of this, although, again, the Congress has performed less than adequately. While a Nader might bring the debate somewhat in the green or the more progressive direction, as you call it, Tony, I think what is more likely to happen is Nader will take votes away from the Democratic candidate. And whether that makes it something less than a landslide or makes it a closer race, or perhaps even perish the thought, Tony, that the Republican would be elected. But what has to happen then is that the Congress has to represent the interests of the people that elected them and respond to a Democrat or a Republican agenda, and then show that they're capable of getting something done. That's been exactly the opposite of what's happened in the last 2, 4, 6, even going on 8 years because of a Congress's inability to get anything done.
We are talking with George Petek, former Republican state senator, and Tony Palmieri, an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, our two guests this week for the Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. When we come back, we'll talk about the Democratic presidential candidate debate that happened on Tuesday of this week. We'll also talk about John McCain's dust-up with conservative talk radio hosts as well, and other news of the week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock, it's Your Views on the News every Friday in the 4 o'clock hour. Ben Marins talks with a guest about the news of the week and asks you to weigh in on what you think is the week's most significant news story. That's after 4 this afternoon, Your Views on the News. This is our regular Friday Week in Review, when we get the takes of two guests from different political perspectives about the news of the week. Our guests today, George Petek and Tony Palmieri. And there was a debate on Tuesday in Ohio between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. A lot of analysts were saying that Hillary Clinton needed to knock one out of the park or do something spectacular in order to try to slow the momentum of Barack Obama, who is overtaking her or coming very close to her in the public opinion polls in the important states of Texas and Ohio, with the primaries on March 4th. Tony, you said you watched that debate. Mm-hmm. What did you think? Was it a tie, or did Hillary Clinton do what she needed to do, or what?
No, she did not. I mean, Obama, I believe, wins the temperament battle. He's very good at sitting there in a way that looks and sounds very presidential. The Clintons really have been successful over the years as what I'll call street fighters. And Bill and Hillary have been trying to get Barack into a street fight, and he will not go there. I mean, he's probably the only politician in the last 30 years who has figured out a way to deal with the Clintons. I mean, they have always thrived on the hostility and nastiness, usually coming from the Republicans, and then they emerge as kind of like on a moral high ground. They can't do that with Obama. He stands his ground. She did draw some very good distinctions on them, and I think she showed, for example, that his claims on Iraq have been somewhat disingenuous, because while he did oppose it while he was not in the Senate, since he's been in the Senate, his votes have been equivalent to hers. But I'm afraid that's probably not going to be enough for her at this point.
Yeah. Do you think, George Petek, she's in big trouble?
I think she is, and it's largely because of one of the points that Tony's made. Barack Obama is cool. He's calm. He's calculated. He's well spoken. He's a nice guy, and I think people tend to like him. They're attracted to him. Tony mentioned this appearance at Oshkosh. People come out in droves to see this guy, and frankly, I like him too. I'll never vote for him, but I like him because of his style, because of his calmness, his ability to stay, let's say, above the fray.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tony made an interesting point that that in the arguments and in the street fighting that the Clintons have engaged in over the years, that they've taken the moral high ground. I have not heard that comment about Bill Clinton in a long time, but clearly Obama is a unique figure in American politics, not only in Democrat but also in across the spectrum, I think.
And by moral high ground, I'm not talking about personal life. I mean, for example, in the '90s. In the battles with Newt Gingrich, they were able to frame it as Newt Gingrich shut the government down. Bill Clinton wants to get the job done, things of that nature. And Hillary has always been good, I think, at making her opponents seem kind of petty and vindictive. And they have just simply not been able to do that with Barack Obama.
He stands
his ground. He does not get knocked off message. And I think he's frustrated the heck out of the Clinton camp.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is going to happen, though, it has to happen eventually. It may not happen in the context of a Democratic primary, but once the American people see the extent to which the United States of America will go back to the tax and spend mentality, some of the proposals by both Democrat candidates, but Barack especially, go well back to that mentality that was there in the 60s and the 70s, where government can tax us out of the various problems we face. And I think that once the detail is placed on that, some of the luster on the Obama armor is going to come off, and people will see how expensive it's going to be. And that's when, if he is there, and if his policies are proposed, the Senate and the House of Representatives will have to respond according to their constituents and try to keep some of the spending proposals in line. And we'll see how it goes. But clearly, he is an attractive candidate. He has the Clinton machine remarkably on the ropes. And I think in the next week is probably going to sew this thing up for the Obama.
Well, let me throw in another development in the news this week. Civil rights leader John Lewis, a Georgia congressman who had been a longtime Clinton supporter, Hillary Clinton superdelegate, did move over to the Barack Obama camp. He switched allegiances and says he will now be a superdelegate for Barack Obama because the people in Georgia voted for Barack Obama. A blow to the Clinton campaign and brings up the talk of superdelegates here in Wisconsin, too, with Tammy Baldwin in a district here in the 2nd District of Wisconsin, still with Hillary Clinton, though some are pressuring her to switch to Barack Obama. Should she, Tony Palmieri?
All politics is local. I mean, I don't know if there's a credible candidate against Tammy this year. I don't think that there is, but let's face it, in politics, if your district goes overwhelmingly for a candidate at the presidential level and you decide to set someone up, that's something you've got to explain to your constituents. So, I mean, I think Tammy Baldwin, like Russ Feingold and Herb Kohl and other so-called superdelegates, I believe they ought to vote their conscience. But it does really raise some questions. Barack took this state by, I think it was a vote of 58 to 41.
Yep.
To come out for Hillary Clinton at that point, I personally don't understand that, especially if they're claiming that the policy differences between Barack and Hillary are not all that great. Other than personal loyalty, why would they go for Hillary at this point? It doesn't make sense. And quite frankly, I don't understand why. I don't know if Feingold and Kohl have announced their plans yet.
I thought Feingold said that he voted for Barack Obama and that he probably would cast his superdelegate vote for Barack Obama.
But he still hasn't committed it yet.
I'm not sure he did. No.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. It seems it's an interesting dilemma that these superdelegates are facing, as Tony describes. But why wait till March 5th to declare? You know, if you're going to if the deal is done on Tuesday, March 4th in Ohio and Texas, which I think many people are believing that it will be, then it's a fait accompli, and changing one's superdelegate vote at that point is inconsequential.
Yeah, we'll get more on the presidential race here with the John McCain apologized for remarks that a conservative talk show host made in Cincinnati this week when he was warming up a crowd at a John McCain rally. This Dennis Cunningham made some controversial remarks about Barack Obama, using Barack Obama's middle name of Hussein about three times and calling him a hack and other insults. Should John McCain have apologized for that, George Ptak?
Well, the candidate is ultimately the responsible party. He's the leader of the campaign, but it's impossible for him to have control over all of the comments that are made, either by some right-wing commentator or right-wing radio personality or others in the campaign. I'm sure there are multiple times when Barack Obama is caught off guard by some comments that are made by his people, and the press, of course, picks up on it and makes an issue of it. But I think the McCain campaign should have apologized. I think but it's impossible to control everything that's said, even frankly in a rally like that or in a warm-up session for a rally. People need to give the kind of respect to the candidates that they deserve. I mean, these are possibly the leader of the free world in a few months here, and I think we should always be cognizant of that and show respect to the people that are running for, frankly, for any office, but for an office of this magnitude, it's for sure.
Yeah, it was Bill Cunningham, by the way. Leo corrects me, but then this Cunningham says that he's going to vote for Hillary Clinton, and he's mad at McCain, and some other conservative talk show hosts are mad at McCain once again. Tony, what's your reaction to all this?
You know, if I were advising McCain, I don't think he needs to do anything to play up to these conservative or right-wing talk show hosts. I mean, these people have no credibility at this point. You know, good for McCain. I think he's looking at what is happening between Clinton and Obama, and he's realizing the cheap shots against Obama, the throwing the kitchen sink at Obama, does not work. As we just said earlier, he's able to rise above the fray and take the high road. I think McCain realizes the only way he's going to win is keep a debate at a high level, a high principled level, be the straight talk express, which is when he is at his most popular, and take the high road. I mean, the good thing about a possible Obama-McCain race is that it would be the first time in many, many years where we might actually have a legitimate 50-state public policy debate, because I think both of those guys can campaign in so-called red and blue states, and both of them do not seem to be into the politics of personal destruction. Now, there will be,
Yet.
There will be people surrounding both of them that will be intent on making it a nasty, you know, battle, but I think the two of them would prefer to take the high road, is what it looks like anyway.
Yeah. Mark in La Crosse is our next caller. Hi, Mark.
Hello there. I've been listening to the conversation, driving along I-90. I'm a Minnesota resident. I lived in New Hampshire in 92. I voted and supported Pat Buchanan in 96. I voted for and supported Pat Buchanan in 2000. I voted for and supported Pat Buchanan in 1988. I voted for Ron Paul as Libertarian. And this year I cast my caucus vote for Ron Paul and supported him. A couple of thoughts. I don't think McCain wins. Perhaps Clinton doesn't win on the other side. I wouldn't be surprised if she did pull it out, but I think a Democrat is going to win. And the reason I do is I think this war is looming larger than people think. They took it off the national radar with the media, but when we get to the ballot box or the curtain, I think we're going to pull the lever for somebody who we feel is going to get us out of the war. Yeah. And with that comes, I think, a better economy. The economy is treacherous right now, in my opinion.
Well, let me get our guests both to react to whether we're going to go into the voting booth and elect the Democrat, maybe Barack Obama, because he's going to get us out of the war, and John McCain isn't. George Ptak, what do you think of that?
Well, I think the important thing, frankly, for the world to see, and for people like Mark and others, is McCain's commitment to get out of the war with integrity, with a victory on behalf of peace, on behalf of freedom. And that's what the United States of America stands for. That's what it always has stood for. Barack Obama has made some indication that he would pull out and do it with some degree of rapidity. What happens to the Iraqi people? What happens to that segment of the world, and in considering freedom as the goal of the United States? I think Senator McCain or President McCain would understand the input that he is gaining, and that the electorate is delivering to all of the candidates. But I think that our American military deserves the support that it is getting. It is fighting, I think, a winnable war at this point. It's complicated. Of course, there are factions over there that are anticipating retraction and removal of the U.S. They're waiting in the wings to get back in and take over the Iraqi government, take over the Iraqi people. And I think the sooner that Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton pulls our troops out of there, the sooner the powder keg blows again in the Middle East, and that bodes nothing but poorly for the United States of America and the free world.
Tony?
I think Mark the caller is right that the war actually is looming large in the minds of lots of voters. For Senator McCain to talk about possibly being in Iraq for 100 years, and he even goes further than that. He's telling the people we should expect more wars and additional wars. Now, how he thinks that's a winning platform with the electorate in 2008 is beyond me. I don't think that Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama will end this war, by the way. I mean, I think they will be better on Iraq than John McCain. But the anti-war activism is actually growing. March 13th through 16th, in Silver Springs, Maryland, and I hope you do some shows on this, Joy, maybe you have already, there's going to be a winter soldier gathering. It's Iraq war veterans who are going to openly testify about what they witnessed over there, including some pretty serious war crimes. You know, when the veterans coming back start offering that kind of public testimony, and they do it in fairly large numbers, that's a sign that things need to change. Yeah. And I honestly do not think Senator McCain can win the presidency on a platform of more war. That's not what the electorate wants this year.
Tony, my view, and I understand your point of view, but the comments that John McCain made, as I interpret them, are more of the facing the reality that if we don't win, if freedom and liberty and democracy doesn't win here, there will be more wars, there will be more attacks, Al-Qaeda will be energized. And their ilk in various countries around the world. We will be attacked again. I think one of the remarkable achievements, there are not many remarkable achievements in the current administration, but one of them is that the network, the security network, the CIA and others and our allies have prevented additional attacks since 9/11. On 9/12/01, I think people expected a furtherance of the attacks, and we haven't seen them in the last 6 or 7 years, and I think that's a remarkable accomplishment.
Yeah.
I think we would be more inclined to have accomplishments like that and a continued security of the United States of America if we continue the effort in Iraq and defeat the enemy there.
We're going to give George Petek the last word on that topic, and after the break, we'll talk about President Bush talking about the economy at a news conference yesterday and talking about how Congress must pass the domestic eavesdropping bill. We'll talk about those two issues and some state issues after this break. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn, coming up after 9, talking with his guest about conservative icon William F. Buckley Jr. dying this week at the age of 82. John and his guest will remember how Buckley shaped the modern conservative movement. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. This is the Friday Week in Review. I'm talking with George Petak, a principal at White Hirschbeck Dudek Government Affairs in Madison, a former Republican state senator, and Tony Palmieri, an associate professor of communications at UW-Oshkosh, a former Green Party candidate for state legislature, a member of the Oshkosh Common Council, and a media columnist for the Fox Valley's alternative newspaper, The Valley Scene. 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890 if you'd like to join in with an observation, especially about state news, as we're going to spend much of our time talking about state news in this segment of the program. But first, President Bush says the country is not in a recession, but he says he is concerned about slowing economic growth. Speaking yesterday at a news conference at the White House, the president touted the recent economic stimulus package that he says will put money into the hands of consumers. Bush's view of the economy is more optimistic than many economists who say the country is nearing recession or may already be there. Well, I don't know. Are we there, Tony Palmieri?
Well, it sure feels like it in many parts of the country. Up here in northeast Wisconsin, I know that many of my constituents as a city councilor talk about tough times that we're having here. I don't see that the stimulus package that the president supported and the Congress gave him will really help that much. I mean, you know, really, this is linked to Iraq. This president has put so many resources into that endeavor, at the same time cutting taxes for the richest of Americans. I mean, that to me seems like the root of our economic problems. Mm-hmm. And you know, so until Washington gets its spending priorities in order, I think we're headed for some rough times.
Yeah, George Petak?
Well, I never look a gift horse in the mouth in a sense of expecting some of my tax money being returned by the government. However, in the face of all the other issues that are facing the government and facing us as Americans, I don't think borrowing money to give a little of it back to the American people is the way to solve any of the problems we're facing, because somebody's going to have to pay the piper, and it's going to be our children, our grandchildren that are picking up the tab here for the deficit spending and the holes that are being created in the bank accounts there. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that particular stimulus is short term. It may have some benefit. Long term, we're just digging a hole deeper that our kids are going to have to pay, and that mentality has to stop. I think largely the Congress has seen that, but they gave the president the benefit of this particular doubt. No surprise, it's an election year. A lot of people will be able to justify their decision to support the package because of the money that's going back to their voting constituencies. But how do we address the question of the subprime lending and the problems that people are facing there? I know I heard one of the candidates, I think it might have been Senator Clinton, say that we ought to have a moratorium on foreclosures. How in the world can the government get into that kind of a position, bailing people out for poor decisions? Decisions that might eventually gain them some money, but there's a risk. We're constantly presented with risks, and some decisions don't pay off like people want them to. And I don't think it's the place of the government to step in and bail everybody out at all times.
Let me bring up one other issue. President Bush is pushing lawmakers to pass his version of a law making it easier for the government to conduct domestic eavesdropping on suspected terrorist phone calls and emails. Speaking at this same news conference at the White House yesterday, the president pressed Congress to give telecommunications companies legal immunity for helping the government eavesdrop after the September 11th terrorist attacks. Bush says allowing the lawsuits to proceed would be unfair because the companies were told that their assistance was legal and vital to national security. The Senate passed a bill that would provide this legal protection for telecommunications companies, but that protection is not in a version approved by the House. How big a deal is this, Tony Palmieri?
I'm happy to see the House of Representatives putting up some dissent on this one and holding out. I mean, my understanding is the White House and the Senate wants to give retroactive immunity, mm-hmm. Which would make it very, very difficult to investigate any wrongs that might have been done. So, you know, I do think the House Democrats should be applauded for holding out and demanding a better bill.
Yeah. Let me get a call from Ray and then get George Petek to respond. Okay. Ray in Merrimack, hi.
Hi, Joy. Thank you. Yes, I think he's gone right to the point. This is not the president has, under the law, 6 more months to do the surveillance that he needs to do to protect us from Al-Qaeda. This is a law. The President of the United States told these telecom companies to break the law and he would protect them. Now, the President, who is sworn to uphold the law, mm-hmm. is telling people to go break the law and he will protect them. He should be impeached on that alone immediately.
All right, Ray. George Petek, it seems kind of strange that we want to give immunity to these telecommunications companies.
It's a tough call, I have to say. But I think what I see President Bush trying to do in asking the Congress to allow goes so far beyond any Republican or Democrat presidential term. It goes toward the security of our country. And I agree with Tony. A reasonable exchange, and if the House House Democrats choose to hold out and continue the dialogue, continue the negotiations and the debate on the issue, that's part of what we do in government and part of what we do in a democracy, which I think is very, very positive. But the fact of the matter is that surveillance needs to take place. We live in a different world than we did in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, with the kinds of communications that are available for the good guys and the bad guys. And I understand that there is a balance there between individual freedoms and the government's desire and responsibility, frankly, to protect the American people, to protect our borders, to protect rank and file Americans. So surveillance, there is a place for it. To what extent, that's the argument, the debate that's going on now.
Let's go to another issue. Let's go to the state of Wisconsin. And this report that came out this week that says widespread voting problems in Milwaukee marred the 2004 election and could affect future contests like the November presidential election. The city's election commission failed to combat voting irregularities after being hamstrung by state law and inadequate training of poll workers, according to this report by the Milwaukee Police Department's Special Investigation Unit. Problems included ineligible voters casting ballots, felons working and voting at the polls, a failure to keep up with the habits of college students and homeless voters and other things. The Republican Party is saying this just goes to show we need to have a voter ID or picture photo ID at the polls or stop same-day registration. Governor Doyle is saying that he doesn't understand why the Milwaukee Police Department is getting involved in this report and we don't need to make massive changes. What do you say, George Petek?
Well, it's time that we make some changes. I think that the revelations were no revelations, frankly. They were documentation of the suspicions of irregularities that took place in Milwaukee. I think there are similar irregularities that take place elsewhere, perhaps not to the magnitude or the degree, just because of the size of the city of Milwaukee. We need to have a system that continues to reveal integrity of the process. We have, 25, sometimes 35, maybe 45% of the of voting public goes to the polls anymore because, in many cases, they don't think it matters. They think that their votes may not count, and they question the system. Does it really matter? I think that why was the Milwaukee Police Department engaged in this? Well, it was because, as I understand it, the district attorney and the mayor and others saw a glaring need. Of course, there was some political pressure to get something done there. There were so many anecdotal evidences of wrongdoing or at least questionable practices that they needed to be addressed, and the police department was asked to do an objective evaluation, which they did. I think, in my opinion, Republican or Democrat, to maintain the integrity of the voting system, I believe requires a photo ID so that people at the polls can see that there is integrity in the process, and that an individual who challenges the process, who doesn't have the ID, is not allowed to vote.
Tony Palmieri?
I think it's shameful that some of the Republicans would use this report as another argument to get rid of same-day registration. I mean, same-day registration is something that makes Wisconsin almost unique among the 50 states. We really do encourage people, new voters, to vote. What's clear from the report and other reports that have been done about voting irregularities in Wisconsin, what is most needed are two things: accurate voting list, and more important than that, proper training of poll workers. If you have those two things, these problems almost disappear. The Republicans, unfortunately, want to put policies in place that will discourage people from voting who typically don't vote Democrat, who typically don't vote Republican. And so, and that's their concern. They believe that same-day registration benefits Democrats.
To me, it doesn't make any difference whether it's a Republican or a Democrat proposal. What I see, and Tony makes a legitimate point, Wisconsin is perhaps unique among the 50 states allowing the kinds of same-day registrations that we do. Why do other states not do it? Because they are suspicious that people will take advantage of the system, and when people take advantage of the system erodes and deteriorates. Same-day registration, and I have to say, I think there's some merit to it, but then how in the world do you control it so that the same-day registrations are handled in a timely fashion, they're accurate, the people that are registering same-day don't take advantage of it? One way is to have photo ID.
We have other news and state news to cover before we're done here. Let's talk a little bit about this renewed effort, this real, last-ditch push to get the statewide smoking ban through the state legislature. The Assembly holding a big hearing this week with Republican State Representative Wickert calling the hearing. He's the co-author of this legislation along with Madison Democrat Fred Risser. Fred Risser can't get it through his democratically controlled Senate, so the Assembly is going to try first. Do we need to have a statewide smoking ban pass, Tony Palmieri, that includes taverns?
The only other alternative, Joy, is to have what we've been having, which are these really nasty battles at the local level. We had it in Oshkosh a few years ago. Other cities in the state have had it, because this state legislature simply will not act. And what is really disgraceful is that the legislature is actually ending their session this year 7 weeks earlier than last year. And so it looks like they're trying to run out the clock. It really is outrageous, and I hope if they're listening to this, give the people of this state a break and at least vote on something. Do not take the cop-out that the session has ended. You know, do the right thing and vote on this and stop pitting local communities against each other. It's really outrageous.
George Petak.
Sure. One of the things that the state will see is if the state of Wisconsin chooses not to act, and the legislature does have 2 weeks left and could bring this thing to a conclusion if it chooses to do so. I think a couple of things we're seeing is a dramatic impact by the Tavern League of Wisconsin and by Big Tobacco to keep this keep the pressure on the legislature from for them not to act. There is clearly evidence of that in every community. What we will see, though, is a dramatic increase in these local referenda.
Yeah.
Local city councils taking action, county boards, because the people of Wisconsin, to the tune of 78%, I think, or 82%, want to have this done. They
right.
don't want the patchwork. They don't want the Oshkosh fighting with the Nina and Menasha
mm-hmm.
or Appleton. They want to have a statewide law passed. They want it to be done in a timely fashion.
Right.
They don't want exclusions or exceptions, much like Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, everyone else is doing. It is time to pass this thing, and the legislature needs to hear from the constituents
yeah.
that we are tired of your dancing around. Let's get it done.
And I think the more reasonable parts of the Tavern League simply want an even level playing field, and that's what the statewide ban would do.
Support it.
Yep.
Lots of tavern owners support it because they care about themselves. They care about their workers. And there are options for people to smoke outside of their establishments.
Yep.
Well, we'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thanks to both of you for being with us, George Pitek and Tony Palmieri. We appreciate your week in reviewing with us.
It's interesting. Tony and I actually agreed on something there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Thank you, George. Thank you, Joy.
All right. Happy Leap Day. Yeah. George Pitek, a principal at White Hirschbeck Dudek Government Affairs in Madison, a former Republican state senator, and Tony Palmieri, an associate professor of communications at UW Oshkosh, former Green Party candidate for state legislature. We thank them both for being with us, and we thank Leo Duran for producing this hour. I am going to be taking a week's vacation, and John Munson will be filling in for me next week, Monday through Friday. I'm going to be in Costa Rica. And so I'm going to take this opportunity because this is my last time on the air when Leo Duran is also with me. Leo has informed us that he is taking a job with a New York City public radio station and is moving on from Wisconsin. And we will really, really miss Leo. He'll be, his last day, I think, is going to be next Friday. So I want to take this opportunity to say goodbye to Leo. We will miss you, Leo. Thank you so much for all of your hard work and for making this program the program that it is today. So good luck to Leo, and callers, you can still call him for the next week or so and say your own goodbyes. Thanks very much for being with us, and I'll talk to you in about a week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.